You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, justice, and believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And I've been saying this for, I don't know how long I've been saying, basically that the only way a Republican can get elected is to either lie about things or to change the topic from economic issues. Because what conservatives are all about, it's not just even Republicans, there's some Democrats who are like this too, but by and large, what conservatives are all about is the money. You know, bottom line, making the 1% richer, making everybody else poorer. There are some conservatives who are about that because philosophically they think it's a good idea. It'll stabilize society. We've talked about this before. This goes back to Sir Edmund Burke in the 1780s and 1790s. In fact, arguably it goes back before that. It goes back to Thomas Hobbes. It goes back to the old idea of serfdom and kingdoms. But in addition to conservatives being all about the money because they think that if there is no strong middle class, you won't have, you know, political uprisings and the problems that come with the middle class. There's also the side benefit that if you're in the 1%, you get richer and richer and richer. And isn't that cool from the point of view of the conservatives? So I offer to you as proof of this the simple fact that Mitt Romney cannot win the presidency of the United States without lying through his teeth. He has done it over and over and over. I mean, just a simple example. He has said on various occasions, I started Staples. Or back when I started Staples. Or I was part of the group that helped start. Sometimes when he's being a little modest, and tip of the hat, by the way, to Dave 9000 over at Daily Kos, who compiled all this. Sometimes when he's being more modest, he'll say, back when I was at Bain and we started Staples. Actually, the guys who started Staples were a fellow by the name of Leo Kahn and Thomas Stemberg. They started Staples, an office supply store in New England. And they wanted to grow it, and they needed some cash to grow it. So they went to a company called Bessemer Venture Partners, which was a competitor of Bain's. Bain does both private equity, which is what I was describing yesterday, where you borrow money and then you dump that debt on the company, and the company must struggle to pay back the debt. But you make a big fee off it right at the beginning. You make money all along. Basically, if the company fails, you win. You make money. If the company makes money, you make money. But there was a much smaller way. Bain was also engaged in venture capital. Venture capital being, we'll buy some of your stock. So Bessemer Venture Partners was going to buy a bunch of stock in Staples, but the amount of money that Staples needed was more than they wanted to put in. And so they actually approached Bain and said, hey, you guys, how about putting some money into Staples? Just a little bit, like $600,000, $650,000. Not much, you know, in the grand scheme of venture capital. But this was a small company. It was a big risk. And Mitt Romney said no. He vetoed it. And then the second time, he vetoed it. And then the third time, he vetoed it. And finally, cooler heads at Bain prevailed, and they said, yeah, let's give him some money. They invested $650,000 in Staples. And when the and that was it, pretty much it. And they later made a $2.5 million investment as it grew. But at the time that it went public, it was still a small chain store. Bain bailed out of it. There were only 24 stores in New England. It wasn't the success story it is today. It was mostly all part-time jobs. But as I said, Mitt Romney can't get elected if he doesn't lie. I'll come back to this in just a few minutes. But Bob Edgar with Common Cause, the president and CEO of Common Cause, is on the line with us. Bob, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
Great having you. I understand that you being Common Cause, are suing the United States Senate. Tell me about this.
That's exactly right. Yesterday we filed in the U.S. District Court here in Washington, D.C., a lawsuit against Vice President Joe Biden as president of the Senate and the Senate itself on the issue of the filibuster. We've just come to the end of our rope on how many filibusters have just hurt average ordinary citizens, hurt people who were going to receive benefits through the DREAM Act, and they got 55 votes in the Senate, but that failed.
55 being a majority. There's 100 senators. So
exactly
55
right.
should have passed it according to the Constitution. It says legislation exactly. shall be enacted by a majority vote of both houses of Congress.
Right. And we've had a lot of conversation about full transparency and disclosure on election contributions. It got 59 votes in the United States Senate and failed.
Huge majority.
Fortunately for us, we have on our board a very distinguished lawyer who's been before the Supreme Court on several occasions, and he's put several years of research and investment into looking at the filibuster, discovered that the filibuster is not in the Constitution. It was technically invented several years after the Constitution, about 20 years after the Constitution, by Aaron Burr. Three decades after that, it was called a filibuster, and it was used mostly in history to protect slavery and lynching laws. It's only been in the last couple of years that there's been this skyrocketing change in how often it has been used, particularly by the conservative Senate, to block not just the legislation, but any conversation about the legislation. The filibuster was used over 140 times in the 2 years of the last 2 years of Congress. So we decided, looking at it carefully, while the Senate has the right to write its own rules, that's in the Constitution, the courts have pushed back on rules of the House and Senate when those rules have been unconstitutional. So we filed with plaintiffs. John Lewis, a civil rights hero from Atlanta, is one of the four House members who are plaintiffs in the suit. We had three young people who were hurt by the demise of the DREAM Act, which helped immigrants here who had gone through college. The ones we had at our press conference yesterday, one's a businessman. The other two had gone through graduate school, and yet they're not able to become U.S. citizens because in one case, at age three, their parents brought them across the line, and they're undocumented. So they are plaintiffs. Common Cause is a plaintiff on the issue of the Disclose Act, and we're hoping in the next 60 days that others will come on board. We're talking, for example, with the state of New York and the city of New York City, both of whom have been hurt over time by the abusive use of the filibuster, where citizens of those areas, the large states and large cities, have been hurt when the filibusters blocked unemployment compensation. And just last week, it blocked the consideration of a student loan program.
We just have a minute left. A quick question. Are you concerned that your lawsuit might be successful just in time for the Republicans to take over the Senate and then do double damage? They blocked all Democratic legislation for 4 years, or will have, and now they'll be able to pass legislation without it being stopped by Democrats. And so Paul Ryan's budget, for example, could get passed if they had even a one-vote majority in the Senate.
I'm not concerned about that. This is not a partisan issue. It's not to benefit the Democrats or Republicans. It's based on the fact that we believe the Constitution and the Founding Fathers intended that the House and Senate would operate under majority rule. Mm-hmm. And the veto would come from the White House.
Right.
And we think that Democrats need to stop whining about losing the Senate and go out and win it next year.
Yeah, okay.
Man up.
I'm with you, Bob. Bob right. Edgar with Common Cause, commoncause.org, of course, the website. Bob, thank you for your service to the country.
Thank you.
It is great. It is absolutely great what Common Cause is up to and what Bob Edgar's doing over there. So anyhow, back to Mitt Romney's lie. How can you get elected by lying? How does that work? I'll tell you right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And do you think the American people will fall for this? I'm concerned that they will. 866-987-THOM.
Just come away to natural to you.
natural thing for Mitt Romney? I mean, you know, the Republicans were quite concerned about this leading up to the, you know, through the primary process. In fact, I remember 4 years ago at CPAC, when Romney was running for president also, Republicans always nominate the guy who ran, the also ran from 4 years earlier. That's basically how it works. And so he was the also ran 4 years ago. He became the candidate this time. And I remember CPAC, there were all these guys walking around with giant flippers that said Romney on them. There was a guy dressed up like a porpoise who was walking around, you know, flipper, hey, yeah, because he's flip-flopping. He lied. He said that the President Obama has not created any private sector jobs. In fact, the president has created 4 million, or at least 4 million have been created on his watch, private sector jobs, 26 straight months of it. He said that President Obama has raised the corporate tax rate. He hasn't. It's a lie. He said that Obamacare is a federal takeover of everyone's health care. It's not even remotely close to that. Would that it were. Even PolitiFact called that a pants-on-fire lie. He lied that saying that President Obama has made the recession worse, when in reality we've had now 26 straight months of job growth, of private sector job growth, corporate sector job growth. There have been some jobs lost in the public sector, and government jobs have been lost. In fact, taxes as a percentage of GDP right now are lower than they were when President Obama took office. The deficit is lower than it was when President Obama took office. And federal spending, all of these expressed as a percentage of GDP, is lower than it was when President Obama took office. You know, that's going to make some Republicans' heads explode, I'll tell you that. In fact, every single private job wiped out in the first few months of the president's administration by the Bush Great Recession has been recouped. Got them all back. But Romney's out there lying about this. He said that President Obama's foreign policy was to appease our enemies. Right. Tell that to Osama bin Laden. Or all the Al-Qaeda guys that have been nuked from the air. Now, I disagree with the nuke from the air, but I'll tell you, it's not appeasement that he's doing. He lied when he said that President Obama's energy policy is leading to high gas prices. Not true. It was the deregulation of derivative trading back in 99 and 2000 that led to this. That was the charge that was led by Phil Gramm, the Republican senator, whose wife was on the board of Enron. This was to help Ken Lay. This was all about Ken Lay. So Romney lied about that. And in fact, he even lied. You know, he said that the president's oil policies are also driving up oil prices. When you've got more oil wells running right now domestically than ever before in the history of the United States, the number of operating rigs, the number of licenses, the number of leases, I mean, it all goes on and on and on. He lied about Medicare. He said that the president was going to end Medicare as we know it. No. That's Paul Ryan and the Republicans. They unanimously, the Republicans in the House of Representatives, I think there was one or two dissenting votes among the Republicans. The Democrats all voted against it. But the Republicans all voted in favor of Paul Ryan's budget that would have turned Medicare into a voucher system. Here, Grandma, here's a voucher worth $6,000. Good luck finding a health insurance company that'll cover you now that you've had a heart attack. And Romney says that Paul Ryan's plan is, quote, marvelous, end quote. He lied about President Obama's. He said he has a secret plan to end gun rights. No. Actually, gun rights have expanded during the three and a half years of the Obama presidency. And then this speech last night that he gave, you know, where he came out with even more lies about it's really quite remarkable. It is just quite remarkable. And the question in my mind, and by the way, great website. It is. Where'd it go? Well, I'll have to track it down. Oh, here it is. RomneyTheLiar.blogspot.com. RomneyTheLiar.blogspot.com. It's amazing. Tom from Minneapolis sent me this quote yesterday, which he has shared with me many times. I have now printed it out, and I'm going to stick it someplace where I can see it more easily. It's from John Kenneth Galbraith, whose economic policies got us out of the last Republican Great Depression. And he says, the modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. Right? I mean, that's literally what they're all about. So the question, this question in my mind, you know, is it possible that the American people are going to buy all these lies? And I think it's not only possible, I think it's highly probable. And one of the reasons why is that so far all the Republicans have bought all these lies. I mean, you had other Republicans. You would think they would listen to their own peers, their own peeps. You got other Republicans. Ricky Santorum. Newt Gingrich. Ron Paul. Well, Ron Paul was very careful never to criticize Romney. He wants some of Romney's money. But you had Santorum and Gingrich and maybe a few others over time. But those two in particular just calling out Romney on his lies. I mean, literally, Santorum called him a liar. And the Republican electorate, oh, hear no evil, see no evil. It's really incredible. So Hutchbilly sends me this amazing piece on the characteristics of a sociopath. That is somebody who's a very accomplished liar. They are glib, they have superficial charm, they're manipulative and cunning, grandiose sense of self, they think that certain things are their right, like being president, pathological lying, lack of remorse, shame, or guilt for those lies, shallow emotions. Sound like anybody you know?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Like maybe that guy running for president who dyes his hair all across the top except on his sideburns? So the question on the table, and I'm going to pick up your calls here in just a second on this, is will Mitt Romney succeed in the sociopathic strategy of lying his way into the White House? Will that succeed? And, I mean, it's going to take a couple $1 billion, but is that enough? I'd say the history of advertising indicates it may well be that if an advertiser is, you know, lacking truth in advertising laws, which ironically, you know, if you lie, you know, if Colgate or Palmolive or whatever, you know, one of these companies was to come out and, you know, McDonald's or whatever, and say, oh, yeah, our Happy Meal is got no fat in it at all. Or just tell a lie. They would be subject to fines. People could go to jail. I mean, there's serious stuff that could happen. If you lie in advertising, you have to tell the truth or something damn close to it. But a politician, the Supreme Court has ruled that in the First Amendment, when it says there shall be no prohibitions on freedom of speech, that in particular that means politics, which means that lies, political lies, are protected by the Supreme Court and the First Amendment. Congress shall pass no laws requiring truth in politics. I'm not making this up. The Supreme Court has reaffirmed that numerous times over the years. Most recently, arguably, in the Buckley versus Vallejo case in 1976, I think it was. So, you know, will he get away with this? By the way, Poet, I believe it was, in the chat room. Yeah, Poet, thank you. Asked, how is Louise doing? I just wanted to give you an update, and then I'll pick up your phone calls here. Louise is feeling pretty good. She's I think we're 3 weeks out from her surgery, and she's recovering nicely. And she starts chemotherapy in a week and a half or 2 weeks, and that's going to be a really rough, you know, 4 months or so for her. And then there's a drug she's got to take for like years to suppress estrogen, but it doesn't have quite the radical side effects of the chemo. So she's not looking forward to it, but she's a fighter and a trooper, and she's been, you know, showing up every day and helping with the show, and in fact, making the show happen. This show You're getting a whole lot more of Louise than you realize in this show, because she really, really does make this thing happen. So anyhow, she's out doing doctor stuff right now, but she will be back. And in fact, often she's even answering the phones here. And so that's the update. Thank you for asking. Renee in Taos, New Mexico, listening on KVOT. Hey, Renee, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to strongly recommend to your listening public that they read a book entitled The Sociopath Next Door by Martha Stout, Ph.D.
I am familiar with the book.
It is incredible. I mean, I started reading it years ago because I was dating sociopaths on a regular basis, and now I can recognize them
from
a mile away. And this is just a very incredible book, and I hope you can kind of just
on the dating scene, they tend to be the guys who are really, really good at seducing women and mostly just interested in having sex, and then they're off to something else because they view them as objects. They view everybody as objects.
Absolutely.
In business, they view workers as objects. This is what, you know, Romney did with Bain Capital.
Correct.
Yeah, it's just a few workers. Take their pensions, put it in our pocket, and fire them. Deal with them. And, yeah, that's, you know, M. Scott Peck wrote a book before The Sociopath Next Door came out. It was about a decade earlier, called People of the Lie. He's a psychiatrist. And it's essentially the same thing, that there is, and then Conservatives Without Conscience. John Dean wrote a book about conservative sociopaths. And authoritarians, the authoritarian personality. When you combine the two, you've got a big problem. A real big problem. So, Renee, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for bringing that book up. It's an excellent one. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Ruth in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Ruth, thanks for listening to KPOJ. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Again, on the sociopath issue, last week in the New York Times, there were two almost back-to-back articles. One was about the things that Romney did when he was a young man, like walking a blind person into a wall and finding that hilarious. The other one about tackling a kid and cutting his hair. The very next day, there was an article about sociopathic children and how you can diagnose them often at a very early age. And part of what it is, you know, in taking enjoyment in other people's pain, not really feeling pain, doing whatever is necessary. And the juxtaposition of those two articles, I think, makes it very clear that this guy is probably a sociopath.
As was George Bush and George W. Bush.
That's exactly right. These are people without conscience. That's why he can do what he did to his dog. It sounds like a little thing, but it's not. It's a lack of empathy.
Yes.
No, I was just going to say they've actually found it's a chemical thing in the brain.
Yes, there's a physiological and physical difference. Now there is a physical difference in people who have been through 2 or 3 years of music instruction. You know, the right parietal hemisphere actually becomes larger. You can measure it with a PET scan. But the question about the sociopath part is that physiological difference, is it genetic? It appears to have a genetic component. Or is it genetics exacerbated by environment? And if it's by environment, is it psychological environment, familial environment, or chemical and biological environment? You know, and nobody really knows, but there seem to be more and more of these sociopathic children being born, or maybe they're just being identified now, and we always had them before. But it raises a really interesting question. And with regard to Mitt Romney, for example, this is from a piece by Chauncey De Vega over at alternet.org. It says, Mitt Romney likes being able to fire people. Mitt Romney takes a drive with a terrified family pet strapped to the roof of his car. Mitt Romney assaulted a gay student while in prep school. Mitt Romney tricked a blind teacher, apparently one he liked, letting the man walk into a glass door. He is a bully. And he is the presumed presidential nominee for a political party of unapologetic bullies. Ergo, he's a perfect Tea Party Republican candidate. This is their perception. But it raises the question, is it possible, if it takes a sociopath to be able to sleep well at night knowing that you have killed people, including innocent people, in this day and age of high-tech warfare and everything else, is it possible for anybody to become president who's not a sociopath?
I would hope so, and I certainly haven't given up hope on that.
Yeah, I would hope so, too. And I personally don't think Jimmy Carter was a sociopath. I don't think Franklin Roosevelt was a sociopath. Lyndon Johnson, I'm not sure about, but he did some good stuff. But, boy, he was a tough guy in the Senate. But in any case, thank you very much, Ruth, for the call. I think that this is a question that we need to be asking. Charles in Alton, Illinois, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Charles. Thanks for watching.
Oh, Tom, man, I'd like to say I appreciate the program. You bring out some good information.
Thank you.
I got a question here about our national anthem, and it has to deal with all the money and politics of Romney.
Mm-hmm.
With the national anthem, it says in there, no refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. And I know slavery's done with and everything, so we can eliminate that. You got the hireling in there.
Right.
And everybody's working for money. You know,
so the national,
he's just out after the money.
The national anthem basically puts workers and slaves in the same category. That's kind of sad.
I was wanting your opinion on that one verse out of there about the no refuge could save the hireling or the slave.
Yeah, I'm going to have to think about it, Charles. I'm reluctant to just give you my initial off-the-cuff response. Let me ponder that one.
Okay. Well, I got another thing about the cannabis sativa plant being legalized.
Yes, sir.
I always turn to the Bible, and at Genesis 1:29, you know, God...
And the herbs shall be your for healing.
Yes, every seed-bearing plant God gave us to use for food or other uses.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Charles. And I strongly have the opinion that marijuana is medicine. We have THC receptors in our brain. Why? Because we co-evolved with it. Harry in Port Charlotte, Florida. Hey, Harry, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hello, Tom. You're great to listen to.
Thank you.
And I'm thinking about these senators and all we got. Have any of them done any time in the service? Because what happened to all the gentlemen? The guys that you'd say yes, sir, no, sir, to, they don't have it no more. These guys are head for blood.
Yeah.
And our blood. And it don't make no sense to me. How come they? And then there's an air in what's happening now. I'm talking to Republicans. I'm down here in Florida, and it's loaded with Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
And last month, the month before, I couldn't talk to one.
Yeah,
they went up. They just, oh no, Obama's no good. Obama, I says, oh, now it's all together different.
Yeah,
they're changing their minds, but slow but sure that this guy is a fake.
I know it's the meme machine is out there. I mean, they're just running nuts. They're sending out these super viral emails. Oh, look at this. He's secretly a Muslim. He when he was 9 years old, he was served dog when he lived in Malaya. That's proof. I didn't know Muslims ate dog, first of all.
He's no sociopath.
I don't think that Obama is a sociopath. I'm quite certain his wife is not. Back to my original question. Have we created, let me refine that question a little bit, and we can chew on this for a couple of hours. Have we created a business environment, and because business has become basically the tail that wags the dog of politics, a political environment where sociopaths rise to the top? Are sociopaths wildly overrepresented in the boardrooms of our corporations, in the CEO offices, and in the Senate and the House of Representatives? I'm starting to think so. Harry, thank you very much for the call. When you see legislation, virtually every Republican in the House of Representatives voting to voucherize, Medicare and to throw women, children, poor people, disabled people off health care rolls. It says to me they're sociopaths.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And then you get the paid shills 24/7 on Fox News and right-wing talk radio just pumping the whole thing. Maybe we have a whole lot more than just 1% of our population.
You better tell me the truth.
Mitt Romney for that, because you'll have a problem. In fact, Mitt Romney right now has a problem with the media. Over the last few days, he has been saying no. His campaign has been telling the press, we will not answer your questions. The candidate will not answer your questions. Ain't going to happen. And the press is starting to get a little upset about this. But this was the strategy that Sarah Palin used. Don't answer any questions. Don't do any press conferences. That didn't win her the White House. But, keep in mind, Obama outspent John McCain significantly, by over $100 million. So if Romney outspends Obama by $30, $50, $100, $200, $300, $500 million, by $1,000 million, $1 billion, if he outspends Obama, will he win? Scott Walker is going to outspend the people trying to kick him out of office. He's raised $25 million from Wall Street bankers and oil barons down in Texas and Kansas. He's already raised this $25 million, And so over at Intrade right now, Intrade.com, they're saying 70-some-odd percent chance that he's going to take that, because whoever spends the most money wins. That's American politics, tragically. It shouldn't be, and we need to do something about it, but it is. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey, listening to WWRL. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. I was thinking corporations are really algorithms with a exploitative desire, void of any morality, to seek a penny out of every single corner of the earth.
Well, if you were to do a psychological profile of a corporation, it would absolutely be a sociopath, because it has no empathy, it has no emotion, and it has a single driven purpose, and that is profit.
Right. And why is not the president or the presidential candidates in any way analyzed or given a mental profile? I remember seeing LBJ's ugly scars and everybody's polyps and all this, you know, basal nose carcinomas, but no one ever talks about the state of the president's mental health.
Well, it's a topic that, I mean, if, first of all, the analysis, the definition of mental health changes constantly, and so that makes it tough. But there have been some attempts. Justin Frank wrote a book called Bush on the Couch, and then he followed it up with another book called Obama on the Couch, where he's a psychiatrist, where he psychoanalyzes these two. And I think he's got some interesting things to say. Randy, thank you for the call. I just don't think that should be part of the process. I mean, that's something that all of us should be doing individually, and you do that by paying careful attention, which unfortunately most Americans don't have the time or the luxury to do. Jan in Detroit, listening to DTW. Hey, Jan, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. Love your show. I just have to say, I've been listening to your show for a long time, but you've really raised a really good point on this. And, you know, I've never heard anybody mention anything about this. Back a while ago, Romney had made a statement, like, you know, like with his hobbies, and he says, I have 5 sons, and he says, I have 18 grandchildren. My grandchildren are my hobby. Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of have a hard time with that. You would take your grandchildren and say they're your hobby? A hobby is something you can put on a shelf when you're done with it. It's like he's such a shallow individual.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, I work in the healthcare profession, and there are so many people in the hospital that will actually vote Republican. And I look at them and I say, why are you doing that? They're taking things away. Oh, well, you know, they'll say, well, you know, we're tired of seeing these kids that are in their 20s on disability, and they get it for, it's like you guys are missing the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't understand. I don't understand. And people, it's like, One of the friends of mine said the other day, well, you know, Governor Schneider, he did at least one thing right. He's going to get all these people off of welfare and cut all these food stamps. It's like, first off, you're fortunate enough that you make a good income.
Right.
There are people out there that haven't had that.
Right. And should you lose your job, you might need those food stamps.
Exactly. And people don't think, and they're so shallow, and it's like we're in a big hole, and I find that the people that are talking like this are the ones that are just trying to crawl their way out of the hole, and they're looking at the others at the bottom. Like, you know, it's just so wrong.
Yeah.
It's so discerning.
No,
it makes my heart ache.
I'm completely with you, Jan. Jan, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for your insightful comments. Randy in Sioux City, Iowa. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Hey, I want to just inject a different point of view here. So many sociopaths in one profession at one point in time, I just don't think it's feasible. I think through deregulation, it is a set pattern that they're using, and they're really anarchists, that they're using deregulation to cause confusion and disrupt government and funnel money to themselves. And then when they get caught in the trappings of this deregulation, like Jamie Dimon did, they change their tune and they point their finger at government. Well, the regulators.
Yeah.
You know, so
or they say, hey, we're too big to fail and we'll take the economy down with us. So give us $380 billion, which is what Jamie Dimon said a couple of years ago.
They're anarchists, Tom. That way,
I think they're sociopaths, Randy. I think that what you're looking at are people who will basically do anything. Here's another one from the definition of sociopath. Changes their image as needed to avoid prosecution, changes their life story readily. It's just callousness, lack of empathy, unable to empathize with the pain of their victims, having only contempt for other people's feelings of distress and readily taking advantage of them. That's what's going on. And I... frankly, I think it's happening in the boardrooms. I think it's happening in government. I think it's happening big time in the Republican Party. And the thing is, and to a smaller extent, in some corners of the Democratic Party, where you've got these conservadems. And the issue, it seems to me, is what kind of a society do we want to have? Do we really want this Ayn Rand libertarian? You know, keep in mind, Ayn Rand was clearly a sociopath. Edward Wayne Hickman, the hero of her novels, you know, the guy on whom she based her novels, was a mass murderer. He murdered a 12-year-old girl, cut her up in pieces, and then ransomed her body back to her father, who thought that she was still alive. And Ayn Rand wrote that he was a Superman, her word. He transcended society's conventions. Because he went to the death chamber basically giving America the finger. I mean, it's just, this was Ayn Rand's hero. This is the right's hero. Anyhow, Paul Cameron is going to be with us next. This should be entertaining. Is the president gay?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, as I was saying, so the president comes out and says he personally thinks that if a gay couple is in love and they want to make a long-term commitment to each other, that they should have the right to get married. They should have the same tax benefits, the same legal protections as a straight couple. And, you know, predictably, there are some people who are upset with that. One of them is Dr. Paul Cameron, the co-founder of the Family Research Institute. Their website, Family Research, INST. Do I have that right, .org? Do I have that right, Dr. Cameron? Okay, thank you. I understand that recently you said that the President of the United States himself might be gay or might have engaged in gay sex. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's starting to look a little bit more possible. One of the features of those who engage in homosexuality is it seems to captivate them. It's homosexuality 24/7.
How do you know that?
Well, I have interacted with a lot of clients. I interact with a lot of gays. I get a lot of emails and so forth from them, as well as written communications.
You know,
this particular, what do you want to call it, a sin, bad habit, what have you, that just seems to dominate a person's life.
It has been my observation that the vast majority of breeders, of straight people, never even think about, you know, gay sex or people being gay or anything like that. Other than, you know, hey, my friend is gay, but they, you know, they don't sit around thinking about it all the time. And it seems to me that the people who are obsessed with gays are probably gay. You know, are you a secret gay?
No, not at all.
How do you know? If you think that it's a choice.
I find attractive.
This is a serious question.
I'm not even interested in a male.
This is a really serious question, Dr. Cameron.
Okay.
If, you know, as a psychological question, let's take it out of you. I shouldn't personalize these things. Let's put it in the abstract. If a person in their own life experience knows that they have absolutely no interest in having sex with somebody of the same sex, of the same gender, then I would think that that person would not assume that people make a choice to be gay. They would know that, you know, they're straight, and they would assume that other people are. On the other hand, if somebody was a closeted gay and or a self-denying gay, and they had and they could see the possibility of choosing to engage in gay behavior or choosing to engage in straight behavior, they might think that everybody simply makes a choice, and they would then project that onto gays and onto straights and say, oh, it's just a choice. Could it not be that the people who are pushing the idea that this is just a choice of behavior are doing so because they themselves are either gay or bisexual?
Well, all things are possible, but it's not most people, I'm sure. In my case, I had the unfortunate experience as a 3-year-old to have my first sexual experience at the hand of an older gay, I guess you'd say. And I know how the thing worked with me. I know how it works with my clients. Males especially, if something is pleasurable and interesting, can get hooked. And fortunately, I didn't get hooked. Fortunately, I got, I guess you'd say, hooked on women or females. And I would say that statistically, as well as with my clients, being seduced, having as your first sexual experience, a homosexual experience, is very powerful. It's not determinative, but it's very powerful.
Well, you know,
in my case, it was, and it's been in my clients' cases.
I'll come out and say something that I've never said before on the air, and that is that, you know, when I was a teenager, there was a gay guy who really worked on me, and I said, okay, fine, let's try it. And I found it not at all interesting, pleasurable, or fun. And you know, because I'm a breeder. I mean, I was born that way. I've known since I was 7 years old I was interested in girls. I think your thesis only applies to people who were born gay or partly gay.
Well, no one can disprove that one could possibly have some sort of inkling, but I know. And from the data that has been assembled, not only by me and my colleagues, but also by Kinsey, most people are not at all interested in homosexuality.
That's my point.
However, sexual experience is homosexual, most males, not females, most males start to drift in that direction.
I don't believe it. I would submit that you're looking at a huge case of sample bias. And I said, you know, this fellow David worked on me. I should say this was entirely consensual on my part as a teenager. But back to this, I'm experimenting with things. But back to this, I think that this is like if your sample is people who had gay sex and liked it, they probably were gay.
Well, you can never disprove something that exhausts the universe of discourse.
Well, however,
two of my clients, let me just point out, the two of my clients were raped, both of them at about 10 or 11. It was their first sexual experience. They were raped anally. Both of them bled profusely, blah, blah, blah. And then both of them eventually got into homosexuality.
But people like, you know, people like them, people like yourself who obsess on gay sex constantly, who are always thinking about it, it just seems to me must be gay.
I don't know your logic, because if you'll notice from our website,
I don't sit around thinking about gay sex.
We have a series of recommendations about how to make the world a better place. Among them are to ban gay marches.
How about making the world a better place
by the former Soviet Union? Go on. Yeah.
Well, how about if you want to make the world a better place, how about starting by not characterizing gays as pedophiles, number one, which you have just done.
Secondly,
because most gays are not pedophiles, not any more than most straight people are not pedophiles. And the percentage of people who are is probably the same on both sides.
Whoa. It can't be. For instance, we have, for the first time, an almost perfect experiment.
You are
in the Catholic Church.
You are the Catholic Church is another place where you've got sample bias. If you say to a young man you are never again going to have access to a woman, what kind of young man is going to go into that kind of world? Particularly if it's already populated by a lot of people who may not have an interest in access to women.
Let me give you the statistics. You tell me what you make of it. Looking at the 22% of Catholic priests who are homosexual, 14% have been caught molesting boys or a boy. Of the rest
that
of them that are heterosexual, 1% have been caught molesting a girl.
That's
almost a perfect natural experiment.
What that tells you is that the Catholic Church is seriously screwed up, and that the whole idea of absolute abstinence for the rest of your life doesn't work. That's what that tells me. And besides that, you're flying in the face of basic, you know, science been done by the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association. Everybody's saying, no, sorry, this is...
Now, you mentioned two organizations which are willing to lie I'm not. And I defy anyone from those organizations. Let's make it on your program. If they'll come and debate me, or in fact, I'll make sure I send you data. The data is overwhelming that those who engage in homosexuality are vastly disproportionately more apt to incorporate children into their sexual practices.
I don't believe
it. My goodness.
And the APA doesn't believe it.
Gays,
neither EPA.
22-23% of them admitting sex with children.
Paul Cameron with us. I just have to say, I think that's a vicious lie.
It's a truth.
And I think you are slandering a lot of really good and decent people.
Well, I'll send you the data. You look at it. Let's get on. Let's have another conversation after you've read the data.
Paul Cameron, Family Research Institute. Thank you, Paul.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, what do you think? 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Who would ever think that for the president to endorse gay marriage equality, that he must have been gay or something like that? Joe in Springfield, Utah. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Oh, and thank you very much. And I feel like sort of a Padawan learner on the Constitution when I get a chance to talk with you. I've been really engaged in it. I'm an overload truck driver. I've been handing them out.
Great.
To me, the Constitution really, makes all of these conversations irrelevant politically.
Conversations about the rights of gays?
The rights of gays and in terms of, you know, we have never had a war since World War II. And when President Obama gave his speech, I went, wow. It was like, I mean, I'm really going to get engaged in this campaign, because I realized it isn't just about, people being able to marry one another when they love each other. What he did is he opened up for the political discourse that goes beyond that to the right of every citizen, as outlined in Amendment 14 at one place, to not have their rights abridged or their immunities abridged by any state, which makes all of these things irrelevant. So what I've done is I've gotten a hold of one of the guys, Democrats running for Senate, and I'm going to get behind his campaign. I discussed the Constitution with him, and then I talked to the Democratic Party in Utah, talked to a young gal working there, and laid out to her that if the Democratic Party grabbed a hold of the Constitution and said, you know what, whatever your issue is with someone who is different, I don't care. The Constitution protects their rights as everybody else, and
right.
I'm about the Constitution.
And the 14th Amendment's pretty explicit about that.
Very explicit. And I've called one of the churches that was all upset about this, and I told them to sit down and shut up. I've also talked to friends in the Mormon church, and I said, I'm going to do everything I can to get rid of your charter. I'm going to do everything, because you have no right. You have a right to have your opinion about something, but when you politically assail a citizen of the United States of America, I'm done with you.
Right. There's the Mormon church in Proposition 8 or Proposition 5, whatever it was, in California. Prop 8, I'm pretty sure it was. Joe, I got to move along.
Right.
Thank you. You made your point brilliantly. I appreciate the call. Jack in Augusta, Georgia, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Jack, what's up on DirecTV?
Yeah, thanks for your show, Tom.
Thank you.
I just got a quote from Voltaire.
Yes, sir.
A French writer, author.
Philosopher.
Voltaire.
Yes, sir.
He said about homosexuality, he said, once is okay, twice never.
Yeah, well, see, that's what a straight person would say, I think, is, okay, I tried that, and not so interested.
Yeah.
But somebody who sits around all day long thinking about it, somebody who builds their life around working with gay people as Marcus Bachmann does, we got to make them straight, or Paul Cameron or many of these other guys, I think that there's more to it than just, I think I'll do, God's work or something. I got to say, and that's why I said it to his face, so I guess I can talk about it. But thank you very much for sharing that quote, Jack. Appreciate hearing from you. Ed in Culver City, California. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. We've talked a time or two. And first of all, I got a question. Do you have any idea what sort of doctorate this Paul Cameron fellow has?
I believe he actually has a PhD in psychology. I could be wrong, but he has a private practice.
About a phony degree. Oh boy! I mean, being a recovering Catholic myself, I just can't get into this guy.
Well, I can tell you, there's as many crazy psychiatrists and psychologists out there as there are people without credentials.
Hey, hey, watch what you say. My wife's a psychologist.
Okay, sorry. As a recovering psychotherapist, I've known a lot of them.
I have known a number of gay people and worked with several, and a couple of them have come out to me, and I've just asked them one question. The question is, are you happy? And the answer was yes, always.
Yeah.
And these are among the most brilliant people I have ever met.
Yeah, although let's be careful of creating stereotypes that
no,
are...
No, not stereotypes. You know, these are just people that I personally have known.
Okay, because my experience, I've known a lot of gay people in my life, and some of them are really brilliant and creative, and some of them are just kind of average or even dumb.
Sure,
and it's just like everybody else. I mean,
exactly,
it's just they're part of the human family.
That's what I was going to say. It's just like any other portion of the population. And so, to me, I just think, leave them alone. Let them be people. We're all people. Leave them alone.
Yeah, there you go. And as people, they should have the same rights to marry as anybody else. Ed, thank you very much for the call. Sophia in Maysville, Kentucky. Hey, Sophia, what's up?
Thanks, Tom. I'm like, hats off to Joe in Utah. I just wrote a letter to the editor of Washington Post about the unconstitutionality of DOMA with regard to the First and 14th Amendments.
Yep.
But anyway, I'd like to challenge Dr. Cameron to post his data, the data he was going to send you publicly on their website for anyone to see, as well as the source of the data.
Well, let me tell you in advance, he has done that and it has been debunked. Debate has already happened. Yeah, and
right.
as I kept pointing out in his, I mean, he was giving examples like, oh well, let's look at Catholic priests. There's massive sample bias there. Sample bias is where your sample is unreliable because it went through a filter before it became your sample. And going through that filter is, you know, young men deciding that they're going to spend the rest of their lives without ever even having the possibility of having a relationship with a woman. And
I was 6 years old when I asked my female babysitter if I could marry her when I grew up.
Uh-huh.
I was six. All I knew is I loved her.
Uh-huh.
Same with my first grade teacher, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I am what I am. I always have been.
So you're a lesbian woman?
Yes.
And you have known that since you were six. I'm a straight guy, and I've known that since I was seven. I think that's the human, common human experience.
I tried to be straight. It was a miserable disaster, so forget that.
Yeah. And I tried to be gay, and it didn't work out all that well. So, Sophia, thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. And, you know, sometimes I wonder about us breeders, you know? 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And still on the table, you know, can Mitt Romney win the presidency with $1 billion and a pack of wives? Oh, this is amazing. Money doesn't grow on trees. Well, maybe not. Yeah, I fired off. Okay, WKYT in Vanceburg, Kentucky reports that five people were arrested for stealing 300 pounds of elm bark. Yeah. Turns out elm bark actually... I think it's slippery elm bark. I think it's a particular type of elm, if I recall my years of studying herbology. Slippery elm bark is a demulcent, and they make it into tea for sore throats and things like that, and it sells for up to $300 a pound. So money does grow on trees. Yeah. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, Pete in Roselle, Illinois. Hey, Pete, what's up?
Good afternoon. I was just wondering about your last guest who seems to think that homosexuality is a choice.
Yeah.
when homosexuality shows itself in the rest of the animal kingdom, does he explain that as a choice too?
Well,
it
thanks.
Is well documented that it does happen.
Yeah,
in
the
animal kingdom.
And it does. And in fact, I used to joke about this pair of wild geese, or not geese, ducks, that we had, two male ducks, mallard ducks, that for 2 years hung around our floating home when we lived in the Willamette River in Portland. And Louise and I called them Adam and Steve, and they preened each other and pulled, you know, cleaned out their feathers, and they took very, very good care of each other, very protective, and they were always together. And when the ducks,
right.
You know, when it was mating season, there was Adam and Steve, and
yep.
I never saw them mating, but they were always together. And yeah, they're, you know, homosexuality exists in the animal kingdom as well as it does, and we're part of that animal kingdom. Surprise, surprise. Pete, thanks for the call. David in Chicago. Hey, David, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Of course, this is directed to Paul Cameron. Paul, please stop with this unnecessary nonsense. It's 2012. Homosexuality has been around since the beginning of mankind. So please be kind. And you, Paul, are and have been creating a grave disservice to society. The planet is overpopulated, folks. Gee, I mean,
we need fewer breeders.
Imagine what the population level would be if there was not homosexuality. It's nature's way, or in your case, Paul, it's God's way to help to control overpopulation. And Paul, please stop trying to take us back to the 1950s. And lastly, my partner, John, and I are approaching our 30th year this July.
God bless you.
In a monogamous relationship.
That's great.
But Paul, please, it's not a choice.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there you go. And David, just, you know, if I may, I've said, I think I was around 7 when I figured out I was interested in girls and not boys. How old were you?
At least 7. And
yeah.
I vividly remember.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think that all of us know long before puberty, long before we have any intention or even, you know, largely capability to engage in sexual activity, we know whether we're gay or straight. We know what our sexual preference is.
Absolutely.
And
so let's move forward like our president wants to take us. Let's move forward and get off this topic because there's other things that set precedence.
Yeah, we do need to move forward from this. I do think, however, that getting off this topic, I think that what we need to do is talk about this topic until it becomes clear to everybody that gays are no different than the rest of us, that we're all just people here. And
absolutely.
And LGBT people have full civil rights under the law. I mean, it's
absolutely.
Just, okay. Thank you very much, David. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And our very best to you and your partner. This is, a lot going on here. Mayo in Jackson City, Minnesota. Hey, Mayo, what's up?
I'd like for you to discuss a question that no one else seems to ever bring up about Romney. He says he loves this country, always says God bless America, and he's for a strong defense. Yet when he could have defended the country by going into service of the country, he went to Paris.
Yeah, during the Vietnam War, he went to Paris to be a Mormon missionary, and which exempts him from the military because you're doing religious service, and he lived in a palace.
But I haven't finished the question.
Yes.
He had 4 sons, and they decided not to defend the country at any time. Now he wants to be president and be the commander-in-chief, where he will have the authority to send other people's sons to war, but not his family.
Yes.
Another thing, a few weeks ago, he was having political talk, and a young man asked him, could he do anything about the high cost of college tuition?
Mm.
And his answer was, if you want a free education, go into the service. So he wants a two-tier country here.
Right.
The rich stay at home, make money, and the middle class and the poor go and defend the country.
Right.
I don't think I want a man like that.
I'm with you. Very well said, Mayo. Thank you very much for the call, and well done. Well done. Blaine in Ness City, Kansas. Let's see on Sirius XM. Hey, Blaine, what's up?
Oh, Tom, people talk about homosexuality being a choice,
mm-hmm.
like they're somehow denigrating that. But this being America, we should be allowed to make choices.
Well, I don't disagree with that in the abstract, but I just my personal experience and the experience of most people I know is that they know if they're gay or straight, and have known since they were kids. And all this hysteria being spread by a very, very small minority of people who are obsessed with homosexuality seems to me that they're basically dumping their pathology on us.
Oh, yeah, Freud talked about that.
Yeah, repression. Repression and projection.
Right. I don't think he was saying it's exactly, it's always homosexuality, but
no,
I mean.
No, of course not.
Yeah, Freud talked about that.
Yeah, and this is what I think is going on, and thank you very much for the call, Blaine. I believe that many of these, the Marcus Bachmans of the world, the people who are absolutely obsessed with gays and what kind of sex they're having and who they're having it with and how they're doing it, and they want to talk about it in as explicit terms as possible, as often as possible, and they even organize their lives so that they hang out with gay people all the time, as Marcus Bachman does and as Paul Cameron does. I think that these folks, there's a pretty high probability, in my opinion. Now, I may well be wrong, and that they're repressed gays, and you know, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, here I am, but and to give them credit, I suppose, you know, these guys, at least the two that I just named, both grew up in a time when to come out was to risk somebody like Mitt Romney beating the crap out of you and cutting your hair off. And so, you know, there was considerable risk associated with being out and being gay in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s. And 80. I mean, there is to this day. Gay teenagers are the highest risk group for suicide in the United States. And probably in most other countries. At least in those countries where gays don't have civil rights. So, anyway. Terry in Houston, Texas. Hey, Terry, what's up?
How are you doing?
I am well, thank you. How about you?
I'm okay. And I'm not gay. I guess you figured that out. Okay. But anyway.
Actually?
You know, it's not for me. It's not for me to judge anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a Christian, it doesn't give me the right to go out here and judge everybody. But I do have a sense of right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you get that sense of right and wrong from the Bible?
And you know, nobody should go out here and beat somebody up because they don't agree with everything I believe in, or they're gay. You know, that's I have some empathy for, you know, your cause, but I don't agree with it, and it's not for me to judge. I'm a Christian.
Well, you are judging.
You know? Given me,
you are judging. You are seeing the mote in another man's eye when you have a camel in your own, or whatever it was, a beam in your own. Excuse me.
Correct. Yes.
I would submit, Terry, that if you're looking to the Bible to define your morality, then you need to stop wearing clothing made of more than two fabrics. You need to stop eating shellfish right away. If you had ever talked back to your parents, you need to stone yourself.
Okay.
Pardon?
You're preaching to the choir.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
no,
thank
you. Yeah, the principle behind Jesus was, you know, was forgive and you will be forgiven.
But see, that presupposes, you know, that being gay is a sin, and I'm saying it's not a sin.
Well,
it's a difference.
We all have sin.
No, but this isn't one of them.
And it's not for me. It's not for me to sit in judgment. You know,
this shouldn't be even an issue where we put it in the frame of judgment. You know, we've gone past Leviticus and Deuteronomy, Terry. We no longer prosecute people for eating shrimp. If you were to subscribe to the what is it, 536 or 630, however many laws there are in Leviticus, as I recall, you would be prosecuting a hell of a lot of people, and you would be having to sit in judgment of a lot of people, including yourself. I think that we've grown past this stuff. And hopefully we'll finish that evolution.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Evolution, a great word that President Obama used to describe his own perspectives on this. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Victoria Jones of the Talk Ready News Service, talkreadynews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. On the line with us, hey, Victoria, oh, you're in the basement of the White House.
Yes, indeed.
Is the president above you, or is he off and out of town today?
No, he's above us, and in fact, he had an early 11:30 lunch with Speaker Boehner.
Oh, my.
Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, my.
Mitch McConnell.
Uh-huh.
And Harry Reid.
Oh, this should be entertaining. Was it all about the speaker's threat to blow up the government process by virtue of the debt ceiling?
Well, it was supposed to be about President Obama's to-do list over delicious sandwiches. We know they were delicious because Speaker Boehner said they were.
Uh-huh.
But actually, it did end up being a little bit about that. Yes, indeed. And in fact, the president warned the congressional leaders that he wouldn't tolerate a replay of the debt ceiling fight. He called it last year, the deadlock, not acceptable, emphasized he expects a serious bipartisan approach to tackling the budget. He said he stressed the need to avoid fighting old political fights. He said it's simply not acceptable to hold the American and global economy hostage to one party's political ideology. He said it's the responsibility of Congress to ensure that the United States of America pays its bills and maintains its creditworthiness.
Now, I'm assuming that these statements of what he said came out of the White House?
Yes, they came out of Jay Carney at our briefing.
Okay, so essentially what he did, you know, he wasn't trying to change Boehner's mind or Mitch McConnell's mind. They're still committed to making him a one-term president by crashing the economy. But what he did was he put down a marker for the American people. He said, this is where I stand. I want both parties to work together for the best interests of this country.
Yes.
Although that's not what Boehner and McConnell are going to do, I guarantee you.
Right, and it's so interesting because when Boehner gave the speech yesterday at the Peterson Foundation and threw down his marker and threw down his gauntlet and threw everything else down and said this is what's going to happen, won't allow the debt ceiling to be raised unless we have more cuts and no tax increases, Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, was also speaking at the same foundation yesterday, and he said the Treasury has the tools to make sure that we don't need to raise the debt ceiling until early 2013.
Right, until
after
the election.
We don't need to have this showdown in the election year, in October. But Speaker Boehner has already said it's going to happen this year.
So how can he my original take on this, Victoria, was since this is not going to be an issue until after the elections, in fact, until next year, what we were seeing was a classic example of the Republicans get all hysterical about something and the national media goes crazy with it and picks it up. Whereas if the Democrats do something like, for example, the Progressive Caucus coming up with an actual budget that actually would have paid off the debt, you know, and balanced the budget within a decade, it got completely ignored by the corporate media.
Yeah.
And so many of these progressive, you know, Bernie Sanders was you know, out protesting this meeting at the Peterson Foundation yesterday. We had him on this show. He was in the protesters on the street. It didn't get covered in the national media.
Yeah.
Any of that stuff. So I thought, okay, what we're seeing is just the old usual thing of the right wing Republicans. They get all the news coverage for whatever they say. But you're saying that he actually may have the power to make something happen in October, even if the government's not running out of money?
I don't know whether he does, but he certainly thinks he does. And I was in that briefing today, and you would think that he did, judging by the way that this Pavlov's dog response came from the White House correspondents, nearly all of whom asked about this question.
Sure.
So they were pre-programmed to. There were actually other things happening in the world today.
Yes. Well, let's get on to some of those other things.
No, it was just fascinating.
Okay. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Because it's an important issue, but it was just like,
It's catnip. It's a fight. It's a political fight.
It was
catnip for the press corps.
Well, the House this afternoon advanced legislation that would reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act for another 5 years. And in doing so, they overrode Democratic arguments that the Republican bill should be scrapped to consider the bipartisan Senate bill that had already passed.
Mm-hmm.
So the members approved this rule governing floor consideration on a 235-186 vote. Now, they may already have actually voted the bill through. I can't tell, but it's going to happen probably within the next hour. Now, what they did, they had an hour of debate in which Democrats accused Republicans of moving a bill that wouldn't offer enough protections for gays, lesbians, bisexual, transgender people, Native American women, and immigrants and illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Many Democratic women spoke out on this. One Republican woman did. There may have been others, but one Republican woman in particular spoke. Representative Judy Biggert, Republican of Illinois, said, "I see no reason to exclude these provisions from the House bill."
Right.
There was a small group of Republicans who wanted a bipartisan bill, but they didn't get it. So what happens next is what's going to be interesting, because the president has issued a veto threat for that bill.
Right, for the
Republican. He won't sign the Senate bill. At the moment, it's going to have to go and be reconciled between the two bills. I don't know what's going to happen at this point. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Meantime, very briefly, Vice President Biden attacked Mitt Romney's jobs record today while he was in Ohio. Spoke very loudly and passionately, almost shouting. He said, "I resent the fact that they think we're talking about envy. It's job envy. It's wealth envy. They don't get us. They don't get who we are." He said, "It's not just that manufacturing is coming back. America is coming back. Workers are coming back." And he spoke passionately like this for some considerable time. Meantime, Romney today, responding to the Democratic ad that came out earlier this week attacking his business record at Bain Capital, asked about, by a conservative talk show host about that, said that the attacks are really off target, and I think they know. Oh, gosh, Governor Romney at Bain Capital closed down a steel factory. Of course, I was no longer there, so that's hardly something which is on my watch. We were able to create over 100,000 jobs, and then he said on the president's watch, about 100,000 auto manufacturing jobs were lost.
Amazing. Amazing. I'm telling you, Victoria, he can't win the White House unless he lies. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. A lot going on in the world. Boy, reporters covering Mitt Romney's campaign sent out a volley of tweets on Wednesday complaining, this is from the Huffington Post, complaining that they'd been prevented from asking the presumptive Republican nominee questions at an event in Florida. They're physically restraining the press. Physically restraining the press. This, what we're looking at here with a guy worth $250 million who makes $10-20 million a year, sitting on his butt around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive, and pays 14% income tax on it, on millions of dollars in income. What you have here is the 1% trying to buy the White House. It's really quite simple. And when you try to buy the White House, you know, things like facts get very inconvenient. But it's a symptom of a larger problem that we have, because they, you know, there's a very good chance that Romney and the Republicans will buy the White House, and they may well buy the Senate. I mean, we just, I believe it was Nebraska, that this Tea Party candidate who was a fringe obscure candidate, and it was a Republican primary. They were expecting candidate A was going to win and candidate C was the team. And one guy, a guy who started the online stock company, Ameritrade, this one guy throws over $1 million into the campaign of the Tea Party lady, and all of a sudden she is the nominee. It's amazing the power of advertising. It's why people do it. Advertising works. I mean, there's a reason why there are advertisers for this program, why there are advertisers for, you know, sponsors and support, and advertisers in every media. It's how Mark Zuckerberg is about to become a multi-billionaire. People are advertising on Facebook. Well, GM's not anymore, but, you know, you get the point. So increasingly, this corporate power now that has been handed to corporations and to billionaires by the Supreme Court to buy elections, to own politicians, to have their own privately owned politician. This guy threw $1 million into the Nebraska primary. He now owns a Senate candidate. And if she becomes the senator, he will own a senator. Nice work if you can get it, right? We have the best government money can buy now. You know, Bernie is the only person I know who in public life who has come right out and said this, that we are rapidly becoming an oligarchy. Rule by the rich. Over at the Republic Report's blog, republicreport.org, it's the United Republic's blog, there is a series of stories that just lay this out so vividly, so clearly. First, there's a story about why the United States is the only fully developed democracy in the Western world that doesn't require employers to provide paid sick time. Why is that? Well, because when progressives tried to pass the Healthy Families Act, it got out-lobbied by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the American Hotel and Lodging Association, the National Retail Federation, and other right-wing groups. So if you're sick in America, you get to make the choice in many workplaces. I mean, here I think I'm a little more sane. I've actually, you know, had people come dragging in, coughing and sneezing and say, go home. Whoa. We just lost everything. We're still on the air. Okay. Are we still modulating?
Radio.
Okay. We are still on the radio. Is it those breakers or is it the entire building went down? That's amazing. Well, I will continue with my rant here just in the event anybody's listening, because everything just went dark in this studio. We just lost all our power as far as I can tell. But, you know, in the event that you're still able to hear me, and if Dow Global's on the line, it might be time to get a best of show ready. I'm not sure how long our batteries will survive. But yeah, 1 hour in theory. We haven't tested that. So anyhow, the point is that you know, this lobbying, these lobbyists come out and just knock down pretty much everything. It's amazing. And, you know, should it be, should we have this kind of a system where lobbyists basically own the country? I don't think so. I think we've got a real serious problem with lobbyists owning the country. And, you know, law after law after law, there's, you know, multiple ones that you can look at and see the influence of incredible wealth in this country, subverting democracy. Now, the important thing to know about this is not a doctrine that was ever suggested, never, by any president of the United States. In fact, Rutherford B. Hayes, back in 1876, Rutherford B. Hayes, the Republican president of the United States, came out and said, we have... Let me get the exact quote for you. This is just incredible. He said, this was when the robber barons were at the peak of their power. Right, the Rockefeller was making his oil fortune. The railroads were rising in power. I mean, basically, this was when it was all happening. And Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876 came out and said, "This is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, no longer." This was the President of the United States, the Republican President of the United States. "This is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, no longer. It is a government of corporations, by corporations, and for corporations." Now, tell me it doesn't get any stranger than that. I mean, this is from 1876, and as I said, I track this all the way back to 1803. But in any case, the Volcker Rule. Well, before I get to that, this back to these stories that are on the United Republic's blog, Republic Report. Why is America so fat? Well, giant agribusinesses are investing in Congress so that they can get taxpayer subsidies. You know, that there's a link off. There's a story in the news today about how they gave rats high fructose corn syrup. They gave one group of rats high fructose corn syrup, and another group of rats, they gave them DHA. It's a, you know, one of these things in fish oil, right? An essential fatty acid. And then they measured their performance after, I think it was 6 weeks. And what they found was that the rats who were given the high fructose corn syrup or the high, you know, high levels of fructose, their cognition, their functionality, their ability to perform crashed, just crashed and burned. They got dumb. So how much money of our taxpayer money, how much money have you paid in taxes that has ended up in the hands of the corn syrup industry and the corn growers and the basically subsidies for corn? $70 billion over the last 15 years since this program started. $70 billion. To create an epidemic of obesity in the United States. And who's keeping that in place? Well, Monsanto, the American Farm Bureau, Kraft Foods, the American Corn Growers Association. On the other hand, the one group out there who's actually lobbying to end things like corn syrup in our schools is the Center for Science and the Public Interest. Their budget was for lobbying last year, $70,000. Millions being spent on the other side. The Volcker Rule. You know, the Volcker Rule is getting knocked down. Why? Because members of Congress are getting paid off. This used to be called bribery. Now we call it lobbying and campaign contributions. Something fundamentally wrong with that.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour, back with your calls and thoughts right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Andy in Long Pond, Pennsylvania. Hey, Andy, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Andy?
Pretty good, pretty good. I got a question about the gay question.
Yeah.
I think that the overall goal of the power base is to control the population. That's number one. The easiest way to control the population is to take a segment of it and control it first. I think that's what they're doing with the gay population.
Or disempower and disenfranchise. Yeah, well, historically, that's what they've done with a whole variety of minority groups. I think that that's frankly what they're trying to do to the middle class.
But so I think what they're trying to do is set up dangerous precedents, legal precedents for that, for control. Then target other segments of the population that will make it easier for them.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like to me.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Andy, for that insight. I appreciate it. Marie in El Jebel, Colorado. Hey, Marie. Thanks for watching Free Speech
Hi.
TV. What's up?
I wanted to alert you and the audience to the Kinsey Institute's report on heterosexual homosexual rating.
Now, you're talking about the one that came from the 1950s? Or
1948 was when they did this. Now, it's been updated several times, but this is really helpful. We have a tendency to believe that there are polar opposites. You're either homosexual or heterosexual.
Right.
And what they discovered was there was this whole variant, gradiated, range of behaviors that were all perfectly normal if people were willing to be honest about it. So they came up with a 6-point rating scale, and you can be anywhere on this scale, and it can also change throughout your lifetime. Mm-hmm. I happened to be at a conference of sociologists in the mid-1980s, and one of the fellows was making X's on the scale and saying, you know, this might be where you are when you're younger. This might be where you are when you're older. Mm-hmm. And then he drew one that was perfectly in the center and a very large X. And we all said, well, you know, what's that? And he said, well, that's when you're a teenager and everything turns you on. But the reality is that...
I think he's speaking for himself.
Probably so. But the reality is that we can be in different places, and that this range of human behaviors requires honesty on the part of the person who's doing the assessment. And as you said a moment ago, I think there are an awful lot of folks who aren't being honest with themselves and aren't being honest about what the human situation is. But this report is online. You can Google it. Kinsey Institute, heterosexual, homosexual right. rating scale, and you can even get a T-shirt with it on it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Matt in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Don?
Good.
Hey, listen, I am just physically ill and disgusted by guys like Jack Abramoff and the whole concept of lobbying. I understand that, you know, people have their interests, but to put the kind of money that some of these organizations do into this kind of thing, I'd like to understand a day in the life of a lobbyist. You know, I'd like to understand what needs to change, what specifically should be disallowed to, you know, to prevent the corruption and the pushing around of the people who make the laws. What is it, you know, is it standing outside the building and waiting for your congressman to come by? Is it, you know, phone calls? How exactly are they influencing the lawmakers?
Well, with campaign contributions, with meals, with you know, campaign contributions is probably the largest. Now that they've got these super PACs, they can actually come in and you know, destroy your competitor, build you up, or destroy you if you don't go along with them. I mean, this is what they're trying to do. And Matt, thank you for the call. This is what they're trying to do to Sherrod Brown right now in Ohio. Sherrod Brown took on the banksters, he took on Big Pharma, he took on the for-profit health insurance industry, and guess what? They're all funding the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is spending millions of dollars right now as we speak. They are running the ads in Ohio to try and take down Sherrod Brown, the senator from Ohio, who is like one of the really good guys. I mean, he's right up there with Bernie Sanders. And so you should go to SherrodBrown.com and learn more about that. Judy in Mahwah, New Jersey, listening to WWRL. Hey, Judy, what's up?
The gentleman... so-called from the Family Research Institute, I believe.
Yeah, Paul Cameron.
Was saying some of the most outrageous things that I've ever heard, like conflating homosexuality with pedophilia.
I know, and I pointed out to him that they are different things, and that pedophilia exists in the straight world just as much as it does in the gay world, or much just
more
as little,
so
actually.
Because the pedophile is attracted to the prepossession asexuality of children, and that's more likely to be a straight man's interest because the sexuality is less defined in male and female. And this man did not have consensual sex at the age of 3. He was raped by a pedophile.
Yeah.
And if this is still shaping his view, he needs a good therapist, and he needs to stop lying and saying outrageous, outrageous defamations of very good people.
I agree, and that's essentially what I said to him. Judy, thank you very much for repeating it. Mike in Chicago. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Actually, I wanted to address your conversation with this Mr. Cameron.
Yeah.
I think I'm with you on the point that you were trying to drive to him, and basically just wanted to follow through in saying the people who seem to speak out most against homosexuality and the gay culture and everything else related to that, oddly enough, are the ones that are somehow caught in the airport in the men's bathroom doing things or with male.
No, there have been several good studies done where they measured sexual arousal and showed men images. And what they found was that the men who identified themselves as homophobic tended to be aroused by homophobic porn or by gay porn, whereas men who don't care one way or the other. You know, straight men who don't care one way or the other tend, they get aroused by straight porn, but not by gay porn. And but the homophobes get aroused by the gay porn. And I think this is, you know, classic case of, you know, reaction formation. It's Freud all over again. And Mike, I agree with you. And in fact, there's a great clip. There's a band. We had one of the persons on the TV show a couple of weeks ago who's got this song out called Maybe You're Gay. I'll have to find it and play it for you because it's just a hoot. Anyhow, 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's Katie Goodman, Jacob informs me, and the song is You're Probably Gay. You can find it over on YouTube. We'll be right back. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very unguiculately ugly, the good. Joseph Miles, the 9-year-old boy, was walking with his mother on the campus of Washburn University in Topeka, Kansas on Saturday when he noticed a group of people from the infamous Westboro Baptist Church protesting and holding up signs that said, God hates fags. Well, upset by the signs and the protests, Joseph decided to make his own sign out of notebook paper, which read, God hates no one. Joseph's mother said of her son, he's growing up to be a fine young man, and said, I got my Mother's Day gift a day early. Good on you, Joseph, for standing up to rampant bigotry and hatred that is becoming all too common in America today. The bad. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon. Fallon signed Oklahoma Senate Bill 1733 into law Tuesday, which allows Oklahomans to openly carry firearms. The bill allows licensed citizens to openly carry a weapon or conceal it. The bill also allows property owners to openly carry a firearm on their property without a concealed carry permit. While signing the bill, Fallon said the bill, quote, sends a strong message that Oklahoma values the rights of its citizens to defend themselves and their family and their property, end quote. Apparently, Fallon also thinks that Oklahomans want the state to turn into a scene out of a Wild West movie. And the very, very ugly Florida Governor Rick Scott. Scott's war on education in Florida is taking a toll. State Board of Education decided on Tuesday to lower the passing grade on a section of Florida's standardized test because preliminary results showed most of Florida's students wouldn't be able to pass it. The results showed that only a third of students would be able to pass the test this year compared to nearly 80% of students last year. Just so happens Governor Scott cut nearly $1.3 billion in education funding last year. Rather than funding a proper education for Florida's children, Scott and the Board of Education are lowering the bar just to get by. And that is very, very ugly. Boy, is that ugly. That's incredible. Maxine in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Maxine, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I was just thinking that the average person sees so many political ads that when you see them so much, you start to think that it may well be true.
Yes.
When in fact, it's the repetition of it rather than the truth. And when you hear words like always and never, you need to be even more aware that it's propaganda and you're not, there's nothing that's always or never.
Yeah. Very, very well
said.
So
the average person needs to be more aware of what's going on now than ever before.
Yep.
And remember that we need to be more active than ever before.
Yes, because the stakes are higher than they have been ever before. I was talking with Chris Hedges yesterday or the day before, and he made this point that, you know, global warming is confronting the planet with a catastrophe that, you know, the human race has never seen before. And,
right.
And I mean, the stakes are really, really high. Maxine, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Marilyn in Oakland, California. Hey, Marilyn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I'm responding to some of my frustration and what I'm hearing from others about why are people supporting a party that doesn't really care about them?
Okay.
And then I was reading about the neuroplasticity of brain tissue, which is altered by the force of our mental activity. So essentially, we are creating our own brains.
Continuously,
and
yes.
And these people that never, ever think any differently continue to do that. For example, they said part of the brain that responds to fear and threats mm-hmm. and says to people, oh, we need to have another war, is bigger than the brains that, of people that say, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? Let's just
right.
look at it.
Yeah.
And it's, how do we deal with that? My
well,
only experience says we need to have constant dialogue with people.
Yes.
Always, always. And they run from it. And so one of the things I'm trying to do is not confront them, but to question, just always question.
Yes. Keep in mind that the people who describe themselves as conservative are more likely to have a more overactive, base brain, the reptile brain, the fight or flight
yes.
response, and a slightly less active, empathetic and thoughtful part of the brain. And there seems to be a relationship between that and maternal exposure to stress, which produces cortisol. The developing fetus is constantly asking mom, while it's in utero, is constantly asking mom, is the world that I'm going to be born into safe or not safe? And mom is constantly answering that developing fetus by saying, yeah, it's either safe or it's not safe. And the way that mom does that is with the levels of cortisol, which is a hormone that the body produces in response to stress. And we know, I mean, this is not even speculation. This is good, hard science. I wrote a whole chapter on this in my book, The Edison Gene. We know that when mom is experiencing a lot of stress during pregnancy, that the child will have more hindbrain development, more lower brain development, more fight or flight. The child is more likely to be, fight or flight responsive and physically aggressive, and less forebrain development, less of the intellectual capacity. Whereas on the other hand, if mom has a very stress-free pregnancy, then the child is more likely to be intellectually well developed and not be as fearful, frankly. And so one of the questions that this raises is, how do we break the cycle, the multi-generational cycle of stress, of mothers having children in stressful times and thus producing children who are little warriors that will produce more stress? I mean, what is happening, for example, to the pregnant women who are giving birth over the last decade in Afghanistan and Iraq? They're producing children who are going to be the next generation of warriors. And, are we dooming a society to cycles, to ongoing cycles of violence? And it's a real issue, and it's a real problem. And part of the solution is, as you correctly point out, neuroplasticity lasts literally until death. We used to think that brains were only plastic until the teenage years or until adolescence or puberty. Now we know, or maybe 21, 22 years old, now we know that plasticity happens through the lifetime, that we can always grow new brain tissue. We can always develop new things.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call, Marilyn. Thank you for the call and for raising this issue. And because we know that, we need to be reaching out to these people and helping them get past their fearfulness and become more full as people, become more fully people. George in Kasilof, Alaska. Hey, George, thanks for watching Dish TV. Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV.
Hey, I like your show there, Tom.
Thank you.
I'm glad for your show. It tells another perspective of the corruption and the stuff that's going on here in this country. I live up here in Alaska, and if you check, last time I checked, this is the worst corrupt state in the United States. And it's just amazing how, like you say, the corporations control everything. They control the politicians, they control the governors, the legislators. Tom, and it's really frustrating. I heard your theme here a minute, the good, bad, and the ugly. It should be the good, bad, and the corrupt.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating. I don't. You could point out some factors that we need to change.
Well, what we need
we can do this.
What we need to change is the ability of money to influence politics. And the reason why we can't change that, and there have been some good and genuine efforts to do that, and one by John McCain and Russ Feingold was a very noble effort, the McCain-Feingold legislation, that said nobody, whether you're a billionaire or whether you make $60,000 a year, you can't donate more than $2,000 to a political campaign, period. End of discussion. Back in 1907, Teddy Roosevelt passed the Tillman Act, which said that if you're a corporation and you give money to a politician, you get the corporate death penalty. You get put out of business. and the officers of the corporation can go to prison. But the problem is that the Supreme Court knocked down both of those. They knocked down 103 years of law with Citizens United in 2010. And the result of that is that now, because of the Supreme Court, because of nine people, because of five out of the nine people who are sitting in black robes right down the street from where I'm sitting right now, because those people appointed themselves as the Lord Gods of this country, or as the kings and queens of this country, and that they have elevated themselves through this doctrine of judicial supremacy above the president and above Congress, which is not where the founders intended them and is not where the Constitution puts them. Because of that, we have this doctrine that money is speech and that corporations are people. And that's what needs to be taken down. And the way to do that, George, is to go to movetoamend.org and sign up. Join them. Participate.
Well, I urge everybody to do that. I mean, it's unreal the amount of corruption that's, I mean, it's on all phases of the political system anymore.
Yeah.
And greed. And you're right. These people aren't gods, but they think they are. And the sad part of it, they take our weak-minded legislators and elected officials and control what they do and
well,
buy them off.
And tragically, there's a spiral here, because when you've got a system where money, where you know people like Karl Rove can corrupt politicians by either bringing in corruptible people and paying them off, or kicking out uncorruptible people like Sherrod Brown, when you've got a system like that, it tends not only to corrupt the politicians, but then it also attracts corrupt people. And eventually it reaches a point of homeostasis, which I think is largely done in the Republican Party, where all of the politicians are corrupt and all of the corruptors are working with those corrupt politicians, and the system is then stable. The Democratic Party is not there yet, but it's moving in that direction, and it's moving in that direction because, thank you for the call, because of this doctrine that the Supreme Court brought us of money is equal to speech, and we've got to stop that. We've got to stop that before the Democratic Party is totally wiped out. I mean, they're corrupting the Green Party and the Libertarian Party as well, for goodness sakes. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, back in 2008, you had the Green Party being corrupted with money. It's incredible what's going on. We have to get money out of politics.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
Welcome back, Bill in Bedford, New York. Hey, Bill, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. Thanks so much for putting me through. I'm a teacher. I was a teacher when I started. I'm a math teacher at high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a teacher in Florida for 4 years, and I moved on up to New York and taught here for 8. So I've kind of got an interesting perspective on comparing the two, you know. So when you talked about Florida, it kind of struck a nerve with me. You know, when I was down there, you know, it was well known that Florida ranked, I think, was about 50th in spending on education. And I had moved and started teaching there, and I was making, I think it was $29,000. This was back in 2000. And I didn't really realize it, but then I looked at the salary schedule, and I said, you know what, well, in 10 years, they told me, or the salary schedule said, I'd be up there at $33,000 after 10 years of service. I had to move.
Yeah.
I just couldn't afford to live.
Sure.
And the effect, the spending, and to think that Governor Scott would actually cut more money out of already the lowest state there is, it's amazing to me.
It is amazing. He cut over $1 billion out of education, and in 1 year, the educational results were dismal. And so they decided to lower the standardized test. It's bizarre. Bill, thank you for the confirmation of what seemed to me like common sense. I appreciate it. When we realize that our cops and our teachers hold our present and our future in our hands, and we start paying both better and holding higher standards, but paying both better, then we're going to have a better life and we're going to have more, you know, a better future. Frankly, I don't know how to say it beyond that. I think it's very, you know, it's a point well made. Graham in Lake Bluff, Illinois. Hey, Graham, what's up?
Hey, not too much. How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's on your mind?
All right, here's my
Can you
question.
Pick up your phone off speaker, please?
That better?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Here's my question. I was telling you a guy before, the problem in the electoral system is the Democrats. And why I say that,
You have Reagan Democrats. You had Bush Democrats. The Democrats are so quick to jump off message and run to the side of the Republicans. What is that about?
I'm not sure that that's true. I think that you've always had a 20 or 30% minority, which has been strongly Democratic and strongly progressive. And there's always been a 20 or 25 or 30% minority that is strongly Republican and strongly conservative. And what has swung in the middle is the so-called independent voters. And I think that that's because they are what I refer to as low information voters. They don't know a lot about what's going on. Not because they're dumb, but because, you know, most of them are working 70 hours a week. You know, their lives are insane.
Look at this. When President Obama came into office, after 6 months, his heavy Democratic LGBT community went after him. In 12 months, the Hispanic community went after him. In about a little after that, the black community went after him. They thought we had elected a magic black genie.
Yeah.
He has opposition like no politician I'd ever seen before.
Well, I think you're going to see Romney getting opposition. People are going to push back on his being a Mormon. People are going to push back on all his flip-flops, you know, his filling out the questionnaire for Planned Parenthood back in 2002, where he said he was in favor of contraception and abortion, and he believed that Roe v. Wade was rightly decided and all these things. I mean, there is no shortage and thank you for the call, Graham. There's no shortage of people who are going to, you know, come down on politicians, or push them. And frankly, I think that pushing politicians is the right thing to do. If a politician is not going the direction you want, you need to be coming down on them, and heavy. Yolanda in San Bernardino, California. Hey, Yolanda, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I've called in before a couple months ago. I think I called on Groundhog's Day, and I don't remember the other day. But anyway,
okay.
I just wanted to agree with you about what you're talking about, how people are born with fear because of what their mother, what did you call it, neuroplasticity?
Neuroplasticity is the ability of the brain to constantly grow and develop new ways of thinking and reacting, and that's something that we have throughout our lives. The birth thing is the response to stress during pregnancy, and that's either the hind brain, the reptile brain, the fight or flight brain gets exaggerated, or the forebrain, the thinking brain gets exaggerated.
I know a little bit, you know, but I'm real low income, but I'm still smart, and I try to keep up with all this stuff, and I've had, we have Tourette syndrome and ADHD and all that, and I've read some of your books.
Mm-hmm.
But I met you several years ago, in fact, when you came to speak at our adult support group.
Oh, great.
For adults with ADHD.
Great.
I don't know if you remember, but anyway, the point I'm making is I really agree with that. I feel like that's just been going on my whole life because, I know something about my mom when she was carrying me, and I agree. I just have to say that. And,
okay.
But there is hope for all those people out there that come from fear. If I can do it, all you Republicans out there who come from fear can do it too.
Okay.
smoke some pot. That's what
okay.
I recommend.
Yolanda, thank you very much for the call. I have just 1 minute left. I want to try and get one more call in here. Gary in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I want to talk about, what's happening to this country. It's very discouraging to see the upper classes and the upper middle class dominate the economy. But it's a very hard thing to stop. It's almost a natural process, like an evolutionary process in a society. You will see through history it's always been that case, that the working classes have always been beat down.
And they always fight back.
Hopefully so, but not violently. But, what made me aware of that, I got a little story to say. I was watching the Battle of Thermopylae, what that's all about. But anyhow, they talk about the Greek states. At the time, the Greeks all had city-states,
right.
And they would have a revolution every 300 to 350 years. I didn't give it much thought at first, but I started thinking, in a free society, the rich man will eventually dominate. It's hard to stop it. The man that makes $10,000 a week will enslave the man making $400.
But we were in that position in the United States in 1873 or 76. You had Rutherford V. Hayes, the Republican president, saying, "We have become a nation of, by, and for the corporations." Teddy Roosevelt knocked that down in 1907. And Franklin Roosevelt did it even more in the 1930s. I think that these things go in cycles and that we will fix these. Coming up next in the Tom Hartman program, Senator Sherrod Brown is going to be here talking about jobs, student loan hikes, and more. Plus, my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science. Can sugar make you dumb? And the best of the rest of the news right here. Don't forget, democracy begins when you get out there and get active. Tag, you're it. Get out there and occupy something. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.